This week on Thingamabob.
Can I just squeeze on past you and grab the ranch? Clorox?
Yeah, because there's nothing like bleach manufacturing your food products, right?
Lord Marmorati has been caught as a traitor.
Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Brie.
Well, hello, Josh.
Hello, everybody listening.
And welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme, it's condiments.
Condiments.
If you're wondering why our audio sounds like this, it's because we got a mansion and yeah. We wanted to film in our empty mansion.
We moved into an empty penthouse overlooking Central Park.
We have no furniture. This is going to be our new studio, but yeah. It's under construction.
Yeah, all thanks to our newest VIP patron and producer of the podcast. Josh, what's her name?
Emma is cooler than Josh.
Yay! Thank you,
Emma. What's their name?
What is their name? Thank you. Emma is cooler than Josh.
Emma is cooler than Josh, our newest patron. If you would like to be like Emma is cooler than Josh, you can join our Patreon.
You can. You can join at any tier level to access the extra content that we put out every week. But if you want some extra special perks, including a producer shout out, you can join our VIP patron level, just like Emma is cooler than Josh.
Mm-hmm. Quite the VIP.
A what?
Quite the VIP.
Quite the VIP. We should all aspire to be just like Emma is cooler than Josh.
Anyway, the real reason we're here is because Brie is ill.
Yes.
And I don't want to get in that tiny closet with a sickly person.
No, we're trying to maintain at least some social distance, even though we do share an apartment. But I have the plague, not the real plague that's going down. Not the pandemic plague. Just your
other plague.
Everyday run-of-the-mill common cold plague.
Yeah, it's literally just a common cold, but I cannot afford to be sick.
No, and even though it is just the common cold, it has been miserable. So
yeah.
I cannot recommend. 0 out of 10.
Sounds like I don't want it, so I'm recording from across the room.
Yeah.
Right now.
So our lovely listeners get treated to all of the room sound.
The room noises, because we're not in our beautiful closet studio.
Closet studio.
Whatever, it's fine. 1 week of room sounds. This is, if you're new to our podcast and you listen to episode one, this is going to sound familiar.
Yeah, you know what? Fun throwback to the very first episode. If you want to hear what we used to sound like, it's this, but go listen to episode one.
LOL.
When we
episode
were like,
one, we were so new.
We're so new, so fresh. No
we're
sound
still
panels.
Kind of new to this. But we're definitely like in our groove.
We're figuring it out.
Speaking of our groove.
Yeah.
What's your rose?
Sure.
Of this week.
My rose of this week is that I got to have a non-traditional Thanksgiving for me, but for most people, a traditional Thanksgiving where you see all your extended family members. Usually for my family, it's just the like nuclear family, or even sometimes it's just like me and my parents. Like we don't tend to see everyone because we live all over the country. So everyone's very spread out. But this year we did some extra traveling and I got to see not all of, but most of my extended family for Thanksgiving. So that was fun and exciting.
That's special.
Yeah, it was special.
I never see my extended family anymore.
I don't either, but I did for this Thanksgiving.
And we can all give thanks to that.
We can. I am very thankful for it. It was good. It was really nice to see everybody.
Love.
Yeah. What was your rose?
Well, my rose this week was that. Thanksgiving related.
Oh.
I went over to a Friendsgiving at one of my friend Nicole's houses. You may have heard of her. But it was lovely. I made sweet potato spoon bread, which is a Steckelberg staple dish for Thanksgiving. It's what it sounds like. It's mushy and it's delicious and it's sweet and it's lovely.
And I still haven't tried it.
Bready. I know.
I tell you every time. I've never tried it. It's not like I'm hinting at anything.
No, and you won't ever try it because we're never together on Thanksgiving.
I know.
I was kind of surprised how good it turned out because it was the first time I made it. Yeah. My dad sent me these little like recipe cards that he has had for forever that have like watermarks on them, so I couldn't read part of it.
Classic. Yeah.
It wasn't an important part. I could kind of get the gist of what it was saying. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was so tasty. It was a hit. I had like one piece to take home.
Wow.
Everyone ate it. And this Friendsgiving, it was only like 6 or 7 people.
Yeah.
In a whole pan of this sweet potato spoon bread.
That's amazing. Because I think you told me, you said you were bringing sweet potato spoon bread. And everyone was like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
So for a dish that no one's heard of before on Thanksgiving.
It was a hit. Yeah.
Exciting.
I think the real winner of the evening is the amount of food that Nicole and Vincenzo made. And then also probably the amount of dishes they had to do.
Oh, no. That is the worst part.
It is. I know. I literally like looked around and I was like, if I didn't have to work at 8 a.m. tomorrow, I might help a little bit. But I was like,
yeah.
Because it looked like a lot. So, Nicole, I know you're listening. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for the fact that you hosted a Friendsgiving when I didn't go home and see my real family, which is the whole point of Friendsgiving. It was very nice. I'm glad I got to see you. And I'm glad I got to see you. Actually, I've seen her so many times that I love that. It's been like, I don't know. I'm just like, I was thinking like, for some reason recently, Nicole and I have seen each other in person more. It like took a while to get to this point, but I'm glad we're at this point in our friendship.
Yes, we've gotten to see each other a lot more recently. Me too. I'm including myself. Just, I wasn't at Thanksgiving.
I know. You weren't even here.
I wasn't here. Anyways, what's your thorn?
That was it. Oh, no, my other, I have another rose. And it's that.
I asked what your thorn was.
Oh.
But tell me your other rose, but... That's what your thorn was.
I can't hear that nasally voice.
No, I'm doing my best. I'm so sorry.
I had one more rose. It's that Ian texted saying that he was like, no thingamabob this week. And I was like,
Ian, our friend Ian Turnwald from college. Oh my God.
Yeah, I was so nice. Aww, I was like,
I love it when people like say things to us.
But also because then it's like, oh wow, that was like, that's the biggest form of flattery.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, nothing about this. It's like, right. Oh, well, like.
Our friends do actually listen.
I know.
We love you guys.
Weekly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this goes out to our friends. And my thorn this week goes out to our friends.
Oh, no.
It doesn't.
Oh, good.
It doesn't. It's just, I mean, it's hard to say that this is really a thorn because when you, like, mourn someone's passing, you're celebrating the life and the legacy that they had. So this week, it was a big event that Stephen Sondheim passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I feel the first time in a long time, it felt like this theater community experience that we all felt at the same time. It was so weird. You know, it was all over social media. But actually, just being in my room and listening to my favorite musical, Sunday in the Park with George, I felt like everyone else just experiencing their version of whatever that was.
Yeah.
Like maybe they had a favorite musical of Sondheim's, or maybe they were in a show. Like a lot of people of our friends posted like their show photos from the musical that they were in that was a Sondheim musical. Anyway, it was this weird feeling where I felt like radiating theater.
Yeah.
Not so individually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think after the past like year and a half, it's we felt very distant from the theater community because it's like it almost hasn't existed.
That's a brilliant point.
For several years. And then something big like this happens where Stephen Sondheim's work affected, I would say, everyone to some degree, because even if you're not a huge fan of his musicals in general, the work that he did in musical theater impacted everything that came after it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think everyone just has this, everyone in the theater community and also outside of, but particularly in the theater community, has a really strong connection to some element of what Sondheim did in his life. And I think what you said at the beginning of like death being a celebration of life, is something that I found out recently because I was also on TikTok and getting a lot of videos about his passing. People in the comments were saying, you know, R.I.P. Stephen Sondheim, and a lot of the comments in return were Sondheim was actually Jewish, and in the Jewish faith, you say, may his life be a blessing, or may her life be a blessing. And why am I crying? I was just going to say his life really was a blessing to so many of us.
Yes.
And continues to be. So.
Yes, we can all aspire to have the legacy that was Stephen Sondheim. Like him or hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Special guy. Mm-hmm. So it's a hard one, but again, we are celebrating the life, so.
Yeah.
And his work, like, he has a legacy that literally does live on.
Yeah.
It's not like he was a person that left something, like, we can tangibly listen to.
Yeah.
And experience the shows that he brought.
He was quite literally a living legend.
Yeah.
Before his passing, and now he's, you know, a legend, but, yeah.
Anyways. Do you have a thorn?
My thorn is just that I'm sick. So.
Nice.
I'm sorry to the listeners if I sound scratchy and nasally, but that's just where we're at.
It doesn't compare to this room sound.
To the room echo, the sound of 6 feet apart.
Oh my God. Is right now. I feel like we're reverting. We're reverting back to our original. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, we were just practicing social distancing at the beginning of the podcast.
Oh my God. Whatever.
Anyways.
If you've been with us through this past summer, you know that we've
God
recorded like every episode distanced because I was in Michigan and then in Kansas.
Yeah, we've had some trials and tribulations.
I know some of those episodes, the audio is so funky.
Yeah.
But here we are. We
continue persevering.
Yeah, I'm not my past.
Funky
fresh. I'm only my funky room-sounding present. Okay. Brie, I want you to tell me about whatever condiment you're doing. It's a surprise.
I'm going to tell you.
Remember when I planned to have my condiment be a surprise?
You did. And
you told me what you were doing?
I didn't ask you to tell me. You just did.
I had to tell her because, like, I just didn't want you to read up on it and then me spoil the, like, fun of it.
I know. It's hard because in any episode, I feel like we both always want to surprise each other. But
it's inevitable.
We can't. One of us has to know what the other one is doing so we can make sure we're not doing the same thing.
I know.
Because we have no, like, go-between.
And to me, like, if we both did the same thing, that would be kind of funny. If that, like, really happened.
It would be funny.
It's the, like, the reactions aren't as genuine because you already read about it.
Right.
That's, like, less exciting.
Right.
So it's easier to spoil it at the beginning so you don't spoil the whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my whole point.
Thank you.
Oh, and, yeah.
Whatever, we'll just take turns surprising each other.
I feel like it's every time it's
topic. Me.
I never know what you're doing.
That's not true. I didn't know what you were... Well, for our drunk episode for the Patreon, I didn't know what you were doing.
Yes.
Up until we started recording.
That's fair. But now we started recording, so...
Yeah. Well...
Oh, well. Tell me about whatever it is you're doing.
I'm going to tell you about America's favorite flavor. Can you guess what it is, Josh? Oh,
I'm already over this face she's giving me. America's favorite flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Cheese Whiz?
No.
I should have done Cheese Whiz.
Does that count as a condiment?
Gotta. What other category would that be?
That seems like an Instagram poll. Does Cheese Whiz count as a condiment? Anyways.
Maybe I'll do Cheese Whiz for the next drug episode. Anyway, okay.
Do you want to guess again?
America's favorite flavor?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what could America's favorite flavor possibly... It's like hot dogs. Like, hot dog water.
You're on the right track. It's not hot dogs, but the same feeling of hot dogs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or like apple pie. What's innately American? A lot of things.
I don't know. You're from the Midwest. You tell me.
It's a Midwestern thing?
Mm-hmm.
Cheese Whiz.
No. It's ranch.
Oh, my God. Stop.
I'm going to tell you.
The way I didn't even think of ranch for this episode, I love ranch.
I know, as most people do.
That is America's favorite flavor.
I know.
It should be everyone's favorite flavor.
It should be. Because everyone should love us. Anyways,
everybody loves ranch.
We're going to tell you about ranch and ranch dressing and all things ranch.
Can I just squeeze on past you and grab the ranch?
Exactly. I almost wrote that down in my, like, fun facts because I talk about how it kind of became, like, a meme.
Oh, for, like, Midwestern accents?
Yeah, I was going to be like, oh, in the Midwest, it's, like, a thing where you say, like, can I grab the ranch?
Yeah. I'm just going to squeeze on past you.
I'm just going to
get by you real quick. Yeah. Grab the ranch.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you how it all came to be.
Great.
So, ranch dressing is a combination of several key elements. you need something creamy, something herby, something oniony and garlicky, and something a little peppery.
Music to my ears.
So a standard ranch recipe combines buttermilk, parsley, thyme, dill, onion, garlic, and black pepper, and sometimes uses something like an oil, sour cream, or mayo to bind everything together.
We can make ranch.
Oh, we can and we should make ranch.
Did you see all that leftover buttermilk I have?
No, you have buttermilk?
For the sweet potato spoon bread.
We should make our own ranch.
We have the most important ingredient.
Oh my God. Okay. 6 feet apart, we're going to make ranch. Anyways, ranch is also commonly sold as a dry spice mix, and there's a pretty good reason why. What? You were going to say something?
I'm in. I'm curious.
in with the spice mix.
Okay. I forgot that there was dry ranch, but yeah. Now I can picture the packet.
There's dry. Exactly. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning.
Yes. Come on, Hillary Duff. It's 1937 in the Great Plains of the United States.
Stop. Oh, my alma mater.
There's not a lot of options for, quote, vegetable-based fats. And I think that was code for like Crisco or vegetable oil or like those sort of like emollients in the area. So instead, ranchers and cowboys would use buttermilk as the added fat in their recipes, which is why you see things like buttermilk biscuits all the time, because instead of an oil, they would use buttermilk.
Buttermilk waffles, unstoppable.
Exactly. So because of this, buttermilk dressings were very popular, not only for salads, but for like, you know, whatever your little heart desires to put a dressing on.
Everything.
So Steve Henson, a plumber from Thayer, Nebraska, had been working on his recipe for a buttermilk dressing for quite some time. So in 1950, Steve and his wife Gail moved up to Anchorage, Alaska, following plumbing and construction work. So Steve would also sometimes work as a cook for the men on his crew. But he found that fresh ingredients and dairy products were really difficult to come by in Alaska. So he wanted to come up with a way to make his Midwestern buttermilk dressing available to those who couldn't necessarily get a hold of perishable items. And so he came up with a dried ingredient mix of his dressing and the ingredients that he would put into it that could be stored for an indefinite amount of time and then like later added to fresh dairy when it became available. So after 5 years in Alaska, Steve and Gail moved down to the hills of Santa Barbara, California, and purchased Sweetwater Ranch, which they renamed to Hidden Valley Ranch.
No. Before they made and bottled and...
Yeah. So not only is it a real place, but Hidden Valley Ranch is both a... It's a physical place and what they named their dressing after. So...
I'm like, love it.
Great.
Love it. So he already packaged like little dried ones.
He did it for himself and for like the friends he made along the way.
Oh, okay.
He was like, oh, this is like, oh, you really liked that sauce that I made for dinner the other night.
Here's a Ziploc baggie.
Right. Here's like the Ziploc baggie of the spices that I used.
Brianna's mother.
It is. My mom does.
The amount of little spices that Brie has from her mother.
My mom has given me just jars of spice mixes.
That's the best gift.
It is. It's great. I use them.
Look at them on the shelf that we're in this large room looking at because we're in our closet.
Yes. So he had packaged the mix before, but it was like, let me put this in like a seed envelope for you to use. So they weren't like giving them out yet.
A seed envelope.
That's what I'm picturing in my mind.
Stop.
In my mind's eye. Okay. So we're at Hidden Valley Ranch. They open it up as a guest ranch. So they're not really like raising animals or anything like that or making money off of growing crops. It's just like for visitors to come. And with all of these visitors, they built a steakhouse on their land that they actually soon became like really well known for. And that's what the most popular thing was this steakhouse on their ranch.
Well, you could just slaughter right there.
Exactly. Farm to table. You can watch the whole process.
Ranch to table.
So at this restaurant, one of the things that made it so popular is that they would use this ranch mix that he had come up with, and serve it as a topping on steaks, veggies, and mixed into buttermilk as a dressing. So they would put it on everything. At this time, it was only available as a dry mix, but people were so into this mix that they were like, I want to bring it home. So they would bring their own jars of mayonnaise to the ranch and like take it home in the mayonnaise so that they could mix it up either in the mayo later or in like, I guess, an empty mayo jar. I don't know. It wasn't super well described besides people would bring it home in jars of mayo.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were, everyone was on board for the ranch.
I know why.
We all know why. Because we all like ranch.
Because it's so good.
Yeah, we get
it. You can't eat it on everything.
So the spice mix was so popular that the Hensons began to sell it to local supermarkets as well as to their guests. And then they began making both bottled dressing and envelopes of seasoning available for direct purchase or through mail order. So they would, I don't think the bottles were available for mail order, but the seasoning packets, they would literally put it in like a little envelope and mail it through USPS.
Cute.
Yeah. So according to their son, Nolan Henson, the production of the dressing started to take over the ranch as he remembers spending hours of his childhood filling seasoning packets. Gotta put those kids to work.
That's your legacy.
That's his legacy, yeah. So Hidden Valley Ranch Dressing became a nationwide hit, spreading from California all across the U.S., but becoming a particular favorite of the Midwestern states that inspired its origin. So the Hensons opened up a factory to make and distribute Hidden Valley Ranch, and eventually they sold their product to Clorox in 1972 for $8 million, which today is almost $53
million. Oh my God.
I know. So with the new big name company at its back, ranch dressing suddenly became the most popular condiment on the market. And copycat products from companies like Kraft Foods and General Foods began popping up all over the place. It became even more popular when a shelf-stable, pre-bottled version became available, so customers could purchase the dressing without fear of it spoiling for 5 months.
Can we back up a little bit? Clorox?
Yeah, because there's nothing like bleach manufacturing your food products, right?
Is that still the case?
You know, I am not positive. I meant to look it up and I forgot. Let me look it up right now.
Yeah, because I'm fascinated.
Well, because I think Clorox is like one of those umbrella companies, you know, where they like make, the company is Clorox, but they make a bunch of things, but they're most known for bleach. Well, on the Clorox company website, there's an article from 2017 that says, "This day in Clorox history, we buy Hidden Valley Ranch." So
that was just in 2017?
Yeah. As soon as 2017, they still owned Hidden Valley. So I think it seems like they do. Because I think they're an umbrella company. Yeah, Clorox. Just a simple Google search. The Clorox company still owns it. Ranch dressing soon surpassed Italian as the nation's favorite salad dressing and accompanied meals from mega chains like McDonald's, where it was given out with salads and burgers. But the real kicker came in 1986 with the introduction of the Cool Ranch Dorito.
Oh, don't even get me started.
It was such a big thing because it invited the idea of the seasoning mix being used for more than just dressing, even though the original restaurant at the Hidden Valley Ranch had already been doing that. It was like they brought it back and they're starting to use it for all these different things. And you can now find ranch flavored items in almost any food, including chips, taco shells, pizza flavors, sodas, candy, and more. And with that, I have a few fun facts for you.
Ranch Skittles?
I actually don't know if there's any ranch Skittles. We could look, I'm sure. I didn't bother looking up individuals.
There's no way there's ranch Skittles.
Well, I knew it would give me a list of like 400 items. And right, I was like, I'm not listing all of these.
And I'm going to go through them right now.
So I don't know, but we can check in our free time if there's any ranch Skittles.
You can look it up too and tell us at thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com. Perfect.
Yeah, send us an email. Okay. All right. So over 100 million bottles of ranch are purchased annually in the United States, making it a $1.7 billion industry. Hidden Valley is still the leading brand and offers over 70 different varieties of ranch. 70. I don't know how. I think they're probably including in that not only different like flavor types of ranch, but like fat-free, half-fat.
Wait, you know vegan. What's iconic?
What?
Ranch is made with buttermilk?
Mm-hmm.
and there's buttermilk ranch.
Oh, you know what they might have done? So I did read up about this, but honestly, it was kind of boring, so I didn't include it.
Classic.
They were trying to find a way to make ranch more shelf stable. So I think at one point they did actually take out the buttermilk and they replaced it with like laboratory made oils and things like that so that it would last longer. So it is very possible that buttermilk ranch is like the original ranch and regular ranch is not. And it's full of like the fake stuff.
So if you're not getting buttermilk ranch, you're fake.
It's not real ranch.
It's not, you're a fake fan.
A fake fan, which is also another reason why we should make our own ranch. Because the recipe is very simple and it's all like, you know, we don't have to worry about all of the like,
we have all the ingredients.
Chemicals that are in it now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably really good, too.
And we know it's really good. Oh, homemade or the chemicals?
Homemade, yeah.
Oh, homemade, I'm sure, is really good. I think my mom actually used to make homemade ranch sometimes. Anyways, we're getting off topic. But
I know.
So Hidden Valley Ranch alone sold $440 million worth of product last year.
Wow.
Yep. Same. Most of their sales come from the American South and Midwest, but international interest in ranch dressing is, what did I wrote, is going.
Is going.
Interest is going.
Interest, it's going.
It's going.
It's giving.
It's giving ranch. It's giving American.
It's giving buttermilk.
It's becoming more popular throughout the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I've seen like several TikTok videos of British people who are like, what is this ranch dressing? Never heard of it before. Oh my God, it's so good. They just like do videos of themselves trying ranch.
That's so funny because the object I'm doing, spoiler alert, is Marmite. It's inherently British.
Oh, is it? I thought it was Australian.
Oh, we're going to get into it, baby.
Oh, great.
But anyway, the point is that, like, I'm sure people, well, I, we know people here have, like, tried Marmite or Vegemite.
Yeah, it's like a whole thing.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just funny that ranch is that for them.
It's ranch over there.
We're doing the opposites.
I know. Fun fact, still speaking about Europe, in a lot of Europe, ranch dressing is actually referred to as American dressing. Which is, I thought was funny to read at first, but it's just like us calling things Italian dressing or French dressing or Thousand Islands dressing. It's like you name it after where it comes from. So I'm not mad about it.
You're so ignorant to the things that occur about your own country because you're the country's the main character.
I know.
Of all the countries. So.
We are. We're the main character. American dressing.
American dressing. It's red. Oh my God.
Oh man. So, speaking of America, a 2017 study conducted by the American Association for Dressings and Sauces concluded that 40% of Americans listed ranch as their favorite dressing, followed by Italian dressing at a measly 10%. So it's a huge majority.
I mean, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ranch dressing is so popular that it became a sort of cultural meme in the United States with things like ranch fountains being used at parties.
Yes.
Sayings like, I'm just going to squeeze right past you and grab the ranch from Michigan. And appearances of a ranch dressing hose used by Homer on The Simpsons. It's like a little joke.
Sign me
up. There's even a restaurant in St. Louis, Missouri called Twisted Ranch that incorporated the flavor into every single one of their dishes.
Emma is cooler than Josh.
Oh, she has to go. Oh my God.
You have to go.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about it because you're our VIP on the next podcast.
Anyways, one of their dishes, two of them, include a ranch-infused vodka for their Bloody Mary, which is also rimmed with ranch and salt.
That makes so much sense.
It doesn't. I did think that's actually probably pretty good. And I don't even like Bloody Marys, but it makes sense. And they also have a bread pudding served with ranch for dessert, which sounds awful. But the Bloody Mary doesn't seem like
but
a bad
But the Bloody
idea.
Mary.
And that's ranch.
And that's ranch.
That's the Hidden Valley Ranch.
I'm going to get me some. I love me some ranch.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Brie.
You're welcome.
I'm hungry. So, as you heard in Brie's, unless you skipped to mine because you...
Because you hate me.
You went down to the timestamps, which, just so you know, are quite available. So, if you don't like... this is just... I'm just going to... I'm just rolling off the bunches here. I don't know
off
why.
Off the cuff.
Off the cuff, yeah. I've decided to mention this now. If you want, like, obviously we enjoy having Rose and Thorn and hang out and talk in the beginning before we do objects. But this is a reminder that if you don't like that, the timestamps are down below. And you can just click straight to whatever object you find most interesting. Or to the first object and then listen to both of the objects.
If you're here for no nonsense and all facts.
And if you're new, you know, like, maybe you don't know that. We explained that way back, like, at the beginning. But that's what you can do. No nonsense, straight to facts. Not that we don't give any nonsense in the middle of facts.
It's still half nonsense.
But... okay. Anyway, if you did listen to Bruce, I'm doing Marmite. Thanks. I'm doing Marmite. And so Marmite is the precursor to Vegemite. Vegemite is the Australian version, but Marmite existed before that in the UK. What happened was that during World War One, Marmite was being used for rations, and they didn't have a lot. So Australia was like, well, we're not waiting for our Marmite import.
Fine, I'll do it myself.
Literally, like, create your own. That's basically what happened. And Vegemite is very similar to the concoction of Marmite. It's just that Vegemite's a little stronger and they get different extract, which we'll talk about. Okay.
Intriguing.
So in the late 19th century, the British were brewing beer. And at the end of the process, it left a lot of waste product from the yeast. And German scientist and father of fertilizer, Justus Liebig, was like, is this edible? Can I take this yeast product, shove it in a little package, and sell it? Because, yeah, no yeast left behind. a plus of this byproduct, actually, too, is that it kind of has a salty, meaty flavor, which maybe if you're a big fan of Marmite, like, that's a... you're gonna curse me. It's just what I read on the internet. I have had Vegemite before, but I've never had Marmite.
I know I've tried it before. I'm going to assume. So I used to babysit these kids whose parents were from New Zealand. I'm gonna assume what they had was Vegemite.
I think it's the same thing
because of locale,
right?
But I don't remember. But I tried like just the tiniest bit. It's just very salty.
Very salty. Very interesting. Yeasty. So it has that flavor, but it's 100% vegetarian.
Oh.
So this is kind of useful to kind of vegetarians.
Vegemite.
Vegemite. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But this is Marmite. Anyway, June 1902, he created, maybe not he, but someone created the Marmite Food Company. And the name is called Marmite because Marmite is the name of a French casserole vessel. And what they first served Marmite in was a similar, like, earthenware jar.
Okay.
So that literally would be, like, calling, I can't even, calling, like, wine bottle.
Yeah, I was gonna, well, my brain went to casserole, but what came first, the casserole or the dish? You know, like, is it called a casserole because it's in a casserole dish? Or do you use the dish for the casserole and then said, we don't have a name for this dish. Let's just call it casserole. I don't know.
It's the name of a French casserole vessel.
No, I know.
Oh.
I just meant thinking, like, calling wine bottle, calling Marmite Marmite.
Marmite.
Calling casserole dish.
We just never really know the etymology. Someday we'll do an etymology episode, but we try to get some etymology in there. Anyway... that's basically what it was first sold in. So they called it the packaging, which is very interesting. Great. I don't know why. But now they sell it in a dark glass jar, dark brown glass. And on the front of it, if you've seen Marmite, it's got a little picture of like a little like dish, a Marmite.
Oh.
So it's cute. Like its roots are still there on the packaging, even though now it's sold in something completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they were just like...
well, nod.
I don't want to call this yeast extract. What are we going to call it?
Well, why not? They sell nutritional yeast these days. So.
And this whole thing was nutritional, and that's why they loved it and sold
great.
It. Yeah, exactly. So the first recipe for the original Marmite included yeast extract, salt, celery, Bree's favorite, and spices. And they opened this factory that created this product 2 miles down the street from Bass Brewery, which was the biggest brewery at the time in England. So it was a perfect place to get that yeast.
It's like instead of a cup of sugar, could I get a cup of extracted fermented yeast extract?
Except for they paid a lot of money for it, I'm sure. Right. Wait, that's so true, though. Can I get your waist?
Yeah.
For money. Because they sold it to them, which is iconic. So who's the real winner here? Bass Brewery? Marmite was immediately popular with the vegetarians.
It's always the vegetarians.
I know. They start trends. They start trends. But 1 year later, in 1903, after receiving one gold medal at the Universal Food and Cookery Exhibition and another at the Grocery Exhibition, Marmite was the moment. It had such a specific and unique flavor that the British peoples just did not have at the time. And some didn't like it, but some loved it because it's so salty and specific.
I would probably like it.
Yes. What really took off Marmite's popularity was the discovery of vitamins.
What?
The discovery vitamins weren't discovered until 1912.
Vitamins?
Vitamins. Like the discovery that vitamins exist. They already existed in foods, yeah. But we just didn't know what was making some things have healthier properties.
We didn't know that until the 1900s?
1912.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, it was a long process. It took, like, obviously for maybe a couple decades, at least a couple decades, it was really getting down to it. But for centuries, people knew that certain things were better for you.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously. But what happened was that, like, they were able to break it down to that, like, vitamin A, B, you know, like B12, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
By that time, because they had decades of like, it was like a slow process too. It wasn't like one day someone was like, oh, there's vitamins in here. It was like, it took a long time of scientific process for many chemists and food chemists. And I can't even remember like a bunch of other different scientists and people like that to get us there.
Yeah. That's what, people didn't know a lot about food for a long time.
Yeah.
Mitch, Josh and I are going to talk a little tiny bit about, because it's reminding me of the tomato thing that I told you earlier. We're going to talk about more food-related fun fact things on the Patreon this week.
Yes.
So if you're interested, go to the Patreon, sign up, check it out. But there's some, there's some interesting things that people thought were poisonous that were not poisonous.
Yes. And other interesting
vitamins.
Origins of condiments. But yeah, so vitamins, like, finally were named and came to fruition in 1912. And this, like, definitely helped Marmite, because Marmite was naturally high in vitamins and minerals, also especially B vitamins.
Wow.
And so, of course, the Marmite company was, like, jumping on the trend, and, like, we have a bunch of vitamins and minerals. And so then they put it on the bottle, and they sold it like that, and people, like, then bought it. And then, like, some people that maybe it was an acquired taste to got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they were spreading it on the toast, as they do. And this is actually what got it into the rations of World War One, which I talked about at the very beginning.
Was dense in nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And in a nice little package for those troopers.
Wow. You know what? I think it should be your Halloween costume next year. The giant jar of Marmite.
I love it. Another thing that they did too when they made the dark brown glass jars was to protect the vitamins from harsh sun rays. That's why they have that dark glass.
That is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
My facial serums come in the dark glass so that the sunlight doesn't ruin the vitamin.
Science. Yes. So another thing that kind of happened with Marmite, too, was that in the 1930s, Lucy Wills, an English scientist, used Marmite to successfully treat anemia in mill workers.
Because of the high vitamin B?
Specifically because she had discovered an isolated folic acid in the Marmite as an active ingredient.
Oh, my God. Marmite is medicine.
Marmite is medicine.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, yes. So Marmite kept its popularity through the 20th century. In the 50s, being marketed towards kids and even given to mothers, welfare mothers, for their kids because of the high vitamins and minerals in clinics across the UK. What really signified that this thing was a cult classic, because it, now we know it's so popular, was that they did something like tried to create a, or change the lid from the metal lid to a plastic lid. And there was a like large outcry. And because people liked Marmite as it is, it was something as silly as changing the lid.
Yeah.
And so then everyone was like, not everyone, but Marmite and advertisers and stuff like that were like, this is a product passed down for generations, filled with vitamins, your mom's favorite. now your favorite, like that kind of, it, you know, like marketing for cult classic things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, people go crazy over their product changing exactly. in the slightest little bit.
So that kind of indicated to them that, oh, this is a staple cult product.
Yeah.
Today, the Marmite plant in Burton, which is where the original Marmite plant was, produces 50 million jars a year.
Wow.
Only the half as much as a ranch. But that's okay. The British ranch. Are there more people in the U.S. than in ranch?
Than in ranch?
Than in ranch?
Than in the U.K.? I would assume so. We're much bigger.
Yeah, so that makes sense why it's half.
Yeah, also people put ranch on everything in large quantities. I feel like Marmite is like you want a really thin spread.
Yeah, and that's what they say too. Yeah. They say a thin spread. It's a small bottle. But nobody loves Marmite as much as Tracy Matthews in Wales. She has spent £15,000 on Marmite memorabilia and has over 2,000 jars of Marmite.
To do what with?
To not eat.
To just look
just
at.
Just look. Yeah.
Wow.
She loves Marmite. And I was perusing a Wales news site about this when I read this sentence. Tracy is such a fan that she's even a member of Marmite's secret society, the Marmorati.
I was going to say the Illuminati.
Literally like the Illuminati.
The Marmolati.
The Marmorati.
Marmorati.
Yes. This is where the fun begins. Okay? I went down a hole with the Marmorati. This is why I did this outfit.
Oh my God.
Okay, they have a Twitter with a bio that says, "We are the trusted guardians of the most delicious elixir this country has ever produced, Marmite XO. Solus amantibus."
Stop it. Not the Latin.
Which is a Latin phrase that appears on a bottle of Marmite XO. Now, Marmite XO stands for, like, extra old, is a special type of Marmite that has been aged 28 days, which is 4 times longer than a normal jar of Marmite. Solus means sun, and amantibus means something like to the lovers or for the lovers. So literally, it means for the lovers of the sun. But mm-hmm. what I think it means, and this is what I saw on Reddit, was that it's for the lovers of Marmite, is I guess it. Marmite because the sun is like life, and Marmite's like life, because uh-huh. it's high in vitamins, and people use it. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Marmite is life.
Marmite is love.
Marmite is Shrek.
Now, this is the pledge that new members of the Marmorati have to say. "I hereby and hereon solemnly swear on celery, yeast extract, riboflavin, and vitamin B12 to keep the following oath and agreement. I promise to do my duty to Queen, Country, and Marmite. I swear to be faithful and bear true allegiance to the Marmorati. I will defend the ebony elixir against all conspiracies, protect its distinctive flavor, and honor its orb-like jar. I will reject any second-rate pretenders, Vegemite. I promise to spread my dark and sticky mistress throughout the land, as well as on toast. And finally, I swear never, ever to consort with members of the Marmalade."
Wow. I think my favorite part of that was ebony elixir.
Mine is to spread my dark and sweet, sticky mistress.
That's disgusting.
Okay, so twist ending alert.
Oh, no.
Yep, this was all a marketing campaign. In 2009.
It was too good to be true.
I know. But it doesn't mean it doesn't get more interesting. They did this campaign to sell the exclusive Marmite XO, as you read about in the bio, and had the opportunity to sign up for and join an exclusive club to get deals and Marmite memorabilia, stuff like that. To apply, you had to, like, create videos and poems showing that you were a Marmite super fan. And then other people would vote on your webpage, and only a select number of people could actually be a part of the community. And in this society, too, after their initiation, they got a, like, special limited edition in this crate fancy bottle of Marmite XO, mm-hmm. Which I'll post a picture of to the Instagram so you can see that it does look kind of like fancy and exclusive, even though it's just a bottle of Marmite. But yeah, 200 members got in only.
Exclusive.
Exclusive.
Wow.
In 2012, they recruited 300 new members for the group, where Lord Marmorati had specific tasks set to the group.
I'm sorry. You said Lord, and I thought you meant like the singer was in the Marmorati.
She might be.
She's Australian, though, so she wouldn't.
She's Vegemite for life. Vegemorati.
Yeah, Vegemorati.
Vegemorati. This, some of these tasks included your best photos of Marmite, paintings, parties, sculptures, cooking using Marmite, obviously. It's an interesting campaign, nonetheless. I feel like...
Effective, obviously. We're talking about it.
We're talking about it. It was so interesting to kind of find out that it was just a campaign, but it's also very interesting to find out that this group even existed. Like, mm-hmm. when I read that one sentence from that Wales article, I got chills because I was like, wait... And then I just started like Googling stuff or whatever. I was like, what is this? And then I finally found out that it was this. But what it did was it brought buzz around Marmite XO with no paid advertising. They were testing to see if they could get buzz around this thing without paying for any advertising for this specific brand. Like, people had to know that Marmite XO existed word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It had 6,000 Twitter updates and 150 blog posts with over 2 million online readers. They then launched the commercially packaged Marmite XO with this buzz.
I hope that whoever ran that campaign got a really fat raise after that.
Maybe.
I hope for them.
What's kind of iconic is if you go to the YouTube page, the Marmorati, the views are like 6,000, 9,000.
Well, it's a secret.
Right. I was like, that's not that much. But you're right, though, because it was only word of mouth. You know, like maybe... Yeah, it just didn't really go viral, which I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that's the kind of thing that should go viral, because it was weird.
But what year was this?
Well, this one was 2012, when they did the YouTube and the Lord Marmorati campaigns.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so really was, like, that was the height of, like, YouTube's popularity, like, as it started, is what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
Who could say?
Who could say?
But the members themselves of the Marmorati were hardcore. They spoke in traditional Victorian speech and even held a trial for Lord Marmorati. This was the accounts from one of the original members. Lord Marmorati has been caught as a traitor. He had been cavorting with Lady Marmalade, and the Marmorati treasures were stolen. He was due to stand trial in London court. A call had been made to members of the Marmorati to make haste to London for the trial of a lifetime. The result was a 3-hour event held in the vaults and banqueting hall of the Honorable Society of Lincoln's Inn, London.
That's so silly.
The evening included a candlelit reception complete with Marmite jar candle holders, a dramatic reenactment of the trial of Lord Marmorati with tailor-made props, pieces of evidence, and Marmite canapes, and most importantly, unlimited champagne. They held an actual trial. People took the train. This person that was giving the account was like, I had to get back home for work the next day.
Oh my God. I mean, I guess it's like any other special interest group, you know? People go to Comic-Con for one thing.
Completely fair. That's so true.
Yeah.
That they decided to have this fake trial for Lord Marmorati that doesn't even exist or whatever.
It's LARPing, but a Victorian trial based around... a popular condiment.
Yeah. After the trial, they crowned a new Lord Marmorite, or new Lord
Marmorati,
which was actually the taste tester for Marmite, who had been the taste tester for a couple years, whatever. His name is St. John Skelton.
Good. He should be Lord Marmorati.
He knows. He's probably tasted the most Marmite.
Exactly. He knows more than anyone.
So the YouTube page hasn't posted in 9 years. The Twitter account hasn't been active since 2012. Mm. So it was kind of this like little capture of one moment of a campaign.
They're up to something big.
Big. Huge. Huge. And that's Marmite.
Wow.
And the Marmorati.
Who would have guessed that condiments could be so fun?
I'm like, when I read about this, I was like, I would never have known that there was a secret society of Marmite.
That's why I like doing this, because sometimes I write my research and I just giggle to myself because it's so silly.
And sometimes I despise it. But it is nice, though, when you get things like these where you're like, oh, my God. Yeah. That's like, you know, we do some of them because they are interesting. But we get a couple of gems where it's like, this is fascinating.
We kind of run the gambit from like really serious to like absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
And the serious ones are always interesting to do, but they can be a little more taxing on us
and the research
in like multiple ways. But the silly ones are just, they're just a good
fun. It's only fun. Yeah. Like when I find myself actually Googling because I'm interested, I'm like, wait, what's this? And this? And this? Lord Marmorati? Yeah.
I love it. Thank you for sharing, Josh.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much for listening. If you have any theme suggestions for us, send them over to thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram @thingamabobpodcast or on Twitter @thingamabobpod. While you're there, give us a follow and please subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes charts and new and recommended page. Also, join our Patreon. It's a great way to show support, and we have new content coming out on our page every week. Make sure to join us next week, where we click our heels together 3 times and talk about movie props.
And thank you so much for joining us, because now we are all 2 things smarter.